Maria, let me set a scene for you.
Producer Antonia Cerejido.
It's a crisp October night. It's 1943. We're in the Hollywood Bowl, which is this beautiful outdoor amphitheater. And that night, they're hosting a Latin American fiesta. And so the performers on stage are playing rumbas and mambos. So people are sitting under the stars. They're watching this concert. Musicians like Desi Arnaz, who, you know who that is.
Of course. Well, actually, he was the most famous Latin American actor, musician, singer, and husband of Lucille Ball.
He was famous on I Love Lucy. And there was Javier Cugat.
Right. Javier Cugat. He was a band leader, of course.
So yeah, there was these big Latin jazz names on stage. And then there was a guest that you might not expect.
Donald Duck.
Yeah.
Or should I say El Pato Donald?
El Pato Donald. Was randomly one of the people at this Latin fiesta night at the Hollywood Bowl. And it wasn't actually Donald Duck, but the man who voiced Donald Duck, Clarence Nash. And so you might be like, why is Donald Duck
at the Hollywood Bowl when they're playing Latin music?
And it's because there was just a movie that was put out called Saludos Amigos.
Oh.
It was a Disney film set in Latin America, and we're actually going to get into the story behind the movie, but back to the Latin American fiesta night at the Hollywood Bowl for a moment. It was more than just a fun Latin night. It was being held by the government, and not the U.S. government, but a collection of Latin American countries' consulates in Los Angeles. Because this was wartime, and the aim of the concert was to strengthen ties between the U.S. and Latin America. And as it turns out, Disney has played a surprisingly involved role in not just the culture, but the politics of Latin America.
And so, on today's show, we're going to explore this relationship between Disney, both the man and the company, and Latin America. We're going to start with the story of a trip that Walt Disney himself took to Latin America during World War II, where he was literally deployed as a weapon against the Nazis. Then we're going to talk about a book that was burned in Chile during the 1970s, and the book is called How to Read Donald Duck. And finally, a look into Disney Pixar's latest film, Coco, which is set in Mexico about the Day of the Dead. And we're going to ask the question, so just how much has Disney impacted Latin America?
To answer that question, we need to go back to 1933, the year Franklin D. Roosevelt became president.
I would dedicate this nation to the policy of the good neighbor.
Right. So this idea, this good neighbor policy, was really FDR's attempt to actually build a close relationship between the United States and Latin America.
And the good neighbor policy had two goals. One, which was more immediate, to stop the spread of fascism in Latin America with World War II looming. And the second goal was to unite North and South America to make the Western Hemisphere its own power, especially its own power that is separate from Europe.
We have been seeking to affirm our faith in this Western world of ours.
One of the things that the U.S. government did at the time to promote the good neighbor policy was to create this special unit that was in charge of essentially propaganda, these movies that featured Latin America and were supposed to make Latin Americans feel more appreciated and cared for by Hollywood specifically. And their first attempts fell totally flat. They were failing miserably.
Because they were like badly made propaganda.
They didn't get it. There was a movie called Argentine Nights, which is actually the first movie the Andrews sisters were ever in. And they were singing like Cuban style songs. They had like fruits on their head. And it was so bad. Argentine people got so offended that there was a riot. They had to bring I'm dead serious. They had to bring riot police in to stop the pandemonium because people were so upset with how they were being represented on screen. And so at that point, the U.S. government officials who were behind this propaganda were like, who can we turn to? Who we know can reach out to people? Who could it be?
I'm getting the picture here. So it's Walt Disney, obviously. So, like, they pick up the phone and they call Walt.
Totally. This was the peak of Walt Disney's popularity. Guess what movie, like, really launched him into...
Ay, Dios mío. Okay, was it Donald Duck? No. Was it Fantasia? No. Was it Dumbo? No. It was Snow White. Okay. All right.
So Snow White had, like, catapulted Disney to the next level. And he had gone from being this guy who had this small shop that was turning out to be really popular to the owner of a major studio. When he had to hire thousands of employees, all of a sudden his relationship to his animators changed dramatically. And so even though Walt Disney became really popular, the animators at the studio were being paid the same amount. And so they decided to unionize. And when Walt Disney didn't react too kindly to this, they went on strike. The banks weren't as willing at this point in time to give him loans to make his movies. And he had huge ambitions. He wanted to make 2 feature films in 1 year, which at that time was unheard of. Not to mention that the World War had closed off his access to European markets. So the banks were like, oh, we don't know. We don't really want to pay for your stuff. But do you know who did want to pay for Disney stuff?
I know it has something to do with Latin America. Oh, it has to do with the government.
Totally. So they were like, hey, Disney, you're in a situation right now, and we have these very specific political needs. What if we offer to pay for your next couple of movies, and we'll pay for you to go to Latin America? They had asked him just to go, shake hands and, like, talk to people, and he was like, no, I'm going to make some movies out of this. I'm going to go get material, and I'm going to make films out of what I learned when I'm in Latin America. And so then he, like, Ocean's 11 style, collected this group of storyboarders and animators and PR people that worked at the Disney studios, and they went on a trip.
And I went down with the staff to see if I couldn't make some films about the ABC countries down there. You know, there's Argentina, Brazil, and Chile.
So that's Disney himself. That audio is from a documentary called South of the Border about Disney's trip to Latin America. And so the first place they went to was Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. At the time, Brazil was in a place where they were really vacillating between the Allies and the Axis. On the one hand, Germany was their largest market for cotton. But on the other hand, as the war was starting, they were seeing that it was probably more beneficial for them to trade more with the U.S. So, yeah, the U.S. was freaking out. And that's part of why Disney was sent there.
The studio we set up in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. An improvised studio in the hotel. It was a clearinghouse for all our sketches, notes, and music, the record we were keeping of our trip.
I kind of, like, love this image of, like, a crew of white folks from Hollywood in Brazil, and they're all walking around with their little sketchbooks. Like, what are they sketching? You know, I mean, like, ooh, color, mangoes. Ooh, I don't know. It just seems really funny.
That's exactly what happened.
The artists spent hours in the botanical gardens, and they found an amazing variety of strange exotic plants. Orchids, for instance, grow wild in Brazil's forests.
Also, in Brazil is where they got their nickname. The bellhop at the hotel they were staying at, every time he had to order a taxi for them or something, he'd go, Walt Disney y el grupo. So they would... In Portuguese, it actually would be O Grupo, but somehow in Brazil, they got El Grupo, and it stuck. So the first place that they were afraid was going to go to the Axis was Brazil, so they spent a lot of time there. And then the next country that they were sort of worried about was Argentina.
Buenos Aires is the third largest city in the Western Hemisphere, a city of beauty and hospitality.
The reason why Argentina and Brazil were these two countries that they were particularly worried about is because they were sizable groups of German immigrants in both countries. As fascism spread in Germany, it also spread within those communities. And so those were the two main targets of their trip. The other thing that's of note is that they had spent time in Buenos Aires, but the thing that really kind of captured their imagination wasn't the city, it was the life of the gauchos.
And we learned a lot more about the Argentine from Senor F. Molina Campos, famous artist and authority on the gaucho, the Argentine cowboy.
How exotic.
No, Maria, you have no idea. There are pictures of Walt Disney dressed up as a gaucho. And as you know, I'm Argentinian. I was freaking out. I was like, what is this bizarre picture? So in that picture, Walt Disney is drinking mate, the popular Argentine tea, and he's wearing this handkerchief around his neck, and he's wearing the big bombachas, the riding pants, and he has this goofy smile, and it's just totally surreal.
So he was not the ugly American that was coming and saying, God, you guys are wearing ridiculous clothes, eating strange fruits, and doing strange dances. He was like, ooh, this is really cool.
Yeah, that was the whole mode of the trip, was like them like being like, we want to learn so much about you guys. We want to, like, really find out about what you're all about. And yeah, there's videos of him dancing folk dances, him singing along tunes. Like, he really got involved. And so after these two countries, the El Grupo split up and they covered a lot of ground. They visited a lot of different countries in Latin America.
Our collection of picture ideas continued to grow as we started homeward. Ecuador with its remarkable capital. Colombia, its coffee and banana plantation. The city of Bogota, Venezuela, birthplace of Simón Bolívar, the liberator. We found our visit much too short to do full justice to all of these attractive places.
So Panama. The whole trip only lasted a couple months. It wasn't that long, but they did a lot of research. They covered a lot of ground. And when they all got back to Burbank, back to the studio, they kind of looked at all of their sketches and they were like, what are we going to do with all of this? This is so much stuff. And what came out was this movie, Saludos Amigos.
Saludos Amigos. So the opening credits are designed to put everybody in a good mood. It's pure 1940s Hollywood, bustling strings, and they're fortified by a trumpet motive and then these descending scales in the brass.
This is Carol Hess. She's a professor of musicology at UC Davis who has done extensive research on the film. And then what they end up doing is they break down the movie into four different segments. Like, they couldn't decide on which character they wanted to do. So they have a Bolivian llama who's friends with Donald Duck in Lake Titicaca.
Seeing the land of the Incas through the eyes of a celebrated North American tourist.
Then there's a gaucho Goofy.
This colorful cowhand of the Great West as his counterpart in the South American gaucho.
There is Pedrito the plane.
A baby airplane named Little Pedro. Buen provecho, Pedrito.
I swear to you, Pedrito the plane is because they only went to the airport in Chile. Like, I don't think they actually saw Chile. Like, why would they pick a plane? That's so random. And then the fourth one that's definitely the most popular one was the section in Brazil that has a talking parrot named José Carioca.
Donald, I will show you the land of the samba.
Samba? What samba?
Ah, the samba.
All right, so what did people say when the film finally came out?
American critics actually loved it.
One critic wrote that, quote, Disney has been careful that in getting his laughs, the gags are not on our good neighbors, but rather on the Yankees. Donald Duck and Goofy are portrayed as the fall guys.
They actually were incredibly impressed by the amount of research that went into the film and also how Donald Duck is sort of like a bumbling American idiot. And there's one scene in the film that comes to mind, which I was shocked by. Donald is like walking around Lake Titicaca, like sort of like this tourist, and he snaps a picture of like an Andean baby on his mom's back. And immediately the kid takes out a camera and snaps one back.
I thought you were going to say immediately the kid reached out and took the camera from him.
No, but it's almost even better because he's like cleverly making fun of the duck. And it was sort of this like, oh, wow, the joke is at the expense of Donald Duck and not of the Andean people, which people were very surprised by.
What about the critics in Latin America?
So I took a look at the Latin American press myself, and sure enough, it was pretty positive.
There's a love affair that's going on here that's a little, to me, unexpected.
I think it's very important to remember that this was wartime. It was a time of unity because they were fighting a common enemy. The other thing that is of note about the film is that
Saludos Amigos premiered not in Hollywood, but Saludos Amigos premiered in Latin America. It was first shown in Rio de Janeiro as Alo Amigos on the 23rd of August, 1942, and this was no ordinary night at the movies. The previous day, after years of vacillating between the Allies and the Axis, the Brazilian president dictator Getúlio Vargas declared war on Italy and Germany.
So does that mean that in the end the trip worked? It was successful?
So I asked Carol that question, and she told me about what this one critic at the time said.
And this critic called Donald Duck more effective than Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's minister of propaganda.
And so in terms of a goodwill trip for World War II, yeah, it worked. But did it work in terms of helping Pan-Americanism? Like, did this Disney film all of a sudden change the relationship?
When the war ended, good neighbor enthusiasms faded, The United States was now a formidable superpower and on to other things.
It wasn't really a love affair. It was political propaganda.
So within a few years, it was as if Disney's frolicsome cartoon characters and friendship-cementing music had never graced the screen.